Imagine a jewelry store owner's worst nightmare. A huge burglary. Millions just gone. Now picture the security company saying, "Well, sorry, but your contract, it only covers $1,000 of that."
Yeah, it's pretty shocking stuff.
That's the core of our deep dive today into Nirvana International, Inc., ADT Security Services, Inc. It's a story that anyone dealing with contracts, which is basically everyone,
Right.
really needs to hear.
Absolutely. And you know, even though this case involves a physical paper contract, it's got huge implications for how we interact digitally too. Think about clicking I agree online.
Oh, yeah, the endless terms and conditions nobody reads.
Exactly. This case suggests just using a service after seeing those terms, maybe even without scrolling all the way down, could mean you've implicitly accepted them. But let's focus on Nirvana and ADT first. So Nirvana, the jewelry store, hires ADT for a security system. Pretty standard stuff.
Right.
They get presented with this 6-page contract.
Okay, 6 pages.
Yeah.
And somewhere in there,
Yeah.
trouble's brewing.
You got it. On page 6, deep in the agreement, there's this clause, and it massively limits ADT's responsibility if something goes wrong, caps their liability at just $1,000.
$1,000 when potentially millions are at stake. That seems wild.
It does. So fast forward, the store gets burglarized, a $2.4 million loss, and allegedly the alarm system fails. Nirvana, understandably, sues ADT.
Makes sense.
But ADT pulls out the contract and points to that $1,000 cap. Now, here's the twist for our law student listeners. The owner of Nirvana, a Mr. Sharma, he only signed the first 3 pages.
Wait, not page 6, the one with the cap.
Nope. Never signed page 6. So the big legal question we're unpacking is, was Nirvana still bound by that liability limit, even though the owner never actually signed that specific
Yeah,
page?
it really is the million-dollar question, quite literally in this case. Okay, so what happened right after Mr. Sharma got this contract? Did he just sign the first few pages and send it back?
Well, he signed and initialed those first 3 pages, yeah. But apparently, he told the ADT rep he needed more time to look over those last 3 pages, including page 6, before he could fully agree.
Okay, so he flagged it.
He flagged it, but, and this is really crucial, he never actually followed up with a formal no. There's no record of him saying, "I reject page 6," or trying to renegotiate that $1,000 limit.
Ah, so he didn't explicitly reject it, left it kind of hanging.
Kind of in limbo, exactly. And despite this, ADT goes ahead, installs the alarm system
Well,
anyway.
even without full sign-off on all pages.
Seems so. And importantly, Nirvana starts paying the monthly fees for the service. They start getting the benefit of having the system installed.
They're using the service.
They're using it. Then, about 6 months down the line, disaster strikes. The burglary happens, $2.4 million in jewels gone, and the alarm, well, it doesn't do its job.
Oh man, you can just feel the owner's devastation, thinking he's protected, and then this. And wasn't there also something about ADT later producing a version of page 6 that looked like it had his signature?
Yes, that adds another layer. ADT did produce a copy later that seemed to have Mr. Sharma's signature on page 6, but what's really interesting is how the court dealt with that.
How so? Did they focus on the alleged forgery?
Not primarily, no. The court's reasoning kind of sidestepped the forgery issue, interestingly enough, and focused much more on Mr. Sharma's conduct after receiving the contract. But yeah, it definitely shows things were a bit messy around the paperwork.
Okay, so the court sees this. Partially signed contract, service installed, service paid for, massive loss. How do they decide if that unsigned liability cap on page 6 actually applies?
This is where we get into a really key contract law concept, implied acceptance. The court looked at principles like those in the restatement second of contracts, specifically section 69.
Section 69. What does that basically say?
In essence, it says if you're offered services like Nirvana was with the alarm system, and you take the benefit of those services, and you had a reasonable chance to reject them, and you knew the provider expected to be paid, well, your silence and your actions, like using the service, can count as acceptance of the terms offered.
Though even without signing page 6, the court is looking at Nirvana's behavior.
Exactly. The court reasoned. Mr. Sharma knew it was a 6-page contract. He let ADT install the system. His business paid the monthly bills. They were actively using the security system.
No, wait.
And crucially, even though he mentioned wanting to review those later pages, he never actually went back to ADT and said, "Hold on, I don't agree to this liability cap," before he started benefiting from the installed system.
So his silence, plus paying the bills and having the working alarm, that combination essentially signals agreement to the whole contract, including page 6.
That's the core of the court's finding. They basically said, look, you can't pick and choose after the fact. You accepted the benefit, the alarm system, knowing the full terms were presented, even if you didn't sign every page. You had the chance to reject those terms up front, and you didn't, so you're bound.
Wow. That's a tough outcome for Nirvana.
Yeah.
Now, ADT also argued the cap itself wasn't unconscionable. What does unconscionable mean in legal terms?
Right. Unconscionability. It's a doctrine that lets courts throw out a contract or a term if it's just grossly unfair or oppressive. Usually, you look at two things. Procedural unconscionability was the process of making the contract unfair, like hidden terms or massive power imbalance.
Okay.
And substantive unconscionability are the actual terms themselves, just way too harsh or one-sided.
And how did that apply to the $1,000 cap versus a potential multi-million dollar loss? Surely that seems one-sided.
You'd think so, but the court disagreed here. They found the cap wasn't unconscionable in this specific context. A key factor was Mr. Sharma himself. He was seen as a sophisticated business owner, not some average consumer potentially being taken advantage of.
So his business experience mattered.
A lot. The court figured he could read and understand the contract. He had the chance, theoretically, to negotiate with ADT if he didn't like the cap. And the clause itself wasn't, like, buried in microscopic print. It was there on page 6 of a pretty short contract.
So, because he was a business owner and had the opportunity to object, the court wouldn't step in and call the cap fundamentally unfair, even with that huge potential difference between the cap and the actual loss.
That was their reasoning, yes. They emphasized this wasn't a situation involving deception or incomprehensible terms aimed at tricking someone.
Okay, so the contract claim fails because of implied acceptance, and the cap wasn't unconscionable. But Nirvana also tried suing for, gross negligence and fraud, right? Why didn't those work either?
Yeah, and this brings up a really important point about the difference between contract law and tort law, like negligence or fraud. For a negligence claim, even gross negligence, you need to show the defendant breached a duty that exists separately from the contract itself.
A duty outside the contract.
Exactly. The court said ADT's main duty here, providing a working alarm, came from the contract. Just failing to fulfill that contract duty, even really badly, doesn't automatically create a separate negligence lawsuit unless ADT breached some broader duty of care they owed to Nirvana, regardless of the contract.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Like, if the ADT installer, while putting in the system, carelessly started a fire that damaged the store, that fire damage might be grounds for a negligence claim, because installers generally have a duty to work safely, independent of the specific alarm contract terms. But the alarm simply not working as promised. The court saw that as fundamentally a contract issue.
Okay, so the failure of the alarm itself was tied too closely to the contract promises. What about the fraud claim related to that potentially forged signature?
Right, the fraud claim. To win on fraud, Nirvana had to show they relied on the false statement, the allegedly forged signature, and that reliance caused them harm.
But how could they rely on it if Sharma said he hadn't even seen page 6 when he agreed to the install?
Precisely the problem. Since Mr. Sharma admitted he hadn't seen page 6 when he allowed the installation and started paying, he couldn't have possibly relied on that signature, forged or not, to make his decision. No reliance, no fraud claim.
So even if ADT did forge the signature later, it didn't actually matter to the court's decision on whether the liability cap was enforceable.
Kind of wild, isn't it? But yes, based on the court's reasoning, the alleged forgery became almost irrelevant to the core issue. The court hung its hat on Nirvana's implied acceptance through its actions using the system and paying for it. They even suggested those actions might have ratified or confirmed the contract anyway, regardless of signature issues.
So, boiling this all down for our listeners, especially law students, what are the big takeaways from Nirvana v. ADT?
Number one, absolutely critical. Read everything in a contract before you agree, and definitely before you start accepting benefits under it. This case is a huge flashing warning sign that your conduct matters.
What you do, not just what you sign.
Exactly. Silence when you have the chance to object, combined with accepting the service, that can absolutely bind you to terms you never put your pen to. You can't just ignore parts you don't like and hope they go away. You have to speak up, formally reject or renegotiate before you take the benefits.
It really underscores that actions, or even inaction, can create binding legal obligations.
Absolutely. And also, remember the distinction between contract and tort. A simple breach of contract, even a bad one, usually won't support a separate tort claim like negligence unless there's an independent legal duty involved.
This has been a really fascinating and slightly scary look into Nirvana v. ADT, a real cautionary tale about paying attention to the details.
It really is. It shows that in the law's eyes, actions and sometimes the lack of action can speak just as loud, maybe even louder than a signature.
So let's wrap up with a final thought. We live in this digital age, constantly clicking I agree on lengthy online terms. How do these principles from a paper contract case like Nirvana v. ADT play out there? What's our responsibility to actually push back on terms we dislike when convenience just tells us to click accept? Something definitely worth thinking about next time that box pops up. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.